start good work.
I mean, maybe just, so before we start, just go, you know my name, sort of, at least half of the people, the Sussman part. But the, but anyway, you heard of Sussman, by the way. But if you, you know, just to go around, just so, you know, I get to know everybody. I'll try to remember everything as we go along. But the year, I've been actually, Wolfson asked me to speak about this topic. We had had there's this rabbinic chat group that the of Gush alumni. Right? We're all, you know, Gush rabbinic alumni. And well, not all of them, not by any means, but everybody in this particular chat group are musmachim, and you know it's actually very nice. I don't know, it got started a couple of years ago, and it's a very nice type of chat group because people from different with that particular link of having learned at Gush and having gotten smicha at some point or another. That's kind of the that weak link between us, but it allows us to cutting through generations, and most of us don't know each other other than through the chat group, but to discuss all sorts of issues that come up. And unlike most other chat groups or many other chat groups, it sort of stays on topic, which is nice. Also, it's sort of like people ask questions, especially younger rabbanim in the field will pose a halachic question. They, and other people get involved. So about 2.5-3 months ago, the question came up in the group in terms of using. Someone said he's giving a shiur about using Alexa on Shabbos, and he was curious about people's input on it. And then one of the people wrote in how they had, around their Shabbat table, they'd forgotten to turn off the Alexa, and, they're not quite sure how it happened, how the echo had, because they don't, because usually the words Alexa and Karl Bach don't come up in the same conversation, but somehow, on the middle of Friday night dinner, Karl Bach started wafting through the air because, it had sounded like, Karlbach, Alexa Karlbach, whatever. And so the, it's a good thing, I guess, that it wasn't like Alexa ACDC. But, it's a, so the question came up, is this indeed us or is it not us or what's going on? There was a lot of discussion about this going back and forth, and I'm going to go touch upon part of it. It was the... and then I sort of responded to at the end, and I'll maybe start with a part of my response. I called it a ramble, and Rabbi Wolfson thought it was very he liked it. No one else commented on it, interestingly enough. But the discussion ended. it was really very funny. I thought funny anyway. That after I'd written it, nobody responded to me offline. No one answered online, and. To my mind, that was a little strange, to be honest, because I really think that, in general, and I saw that in the Facebook post, Sarah Wolfson put it up on a 1 or 2 sentences of what I had written, and I really think that in general, your generation, I guess hopefully I'll still be around to see it too, but your generation and perhaps the next generation after that are going to be facing questions in general that will make the questions of the last 50 years pale in comparison. When you think about it, there's been a tremendous amount of halachic innovation, dealing with technological change over the course of the last 50 to 100 years, maybe even a little bit more than that, but certainly in the post-World War II period. And that has only accelerated. And a lot of the things that people are talking about now are relying on positions that were taken between the last, let's say, 30 or more years ago. And technology obviously is outstripping all of that. And I think that they're going to really need a lot of thought in terms of a lot of the questions that are coming up, whether it's in Now, I'm going to talk about specifically within the area of the Hilchot Shabbat, but not only Hilchot Shabbat, there are issues in Kashrut that are going to be coming up in terms of, people are beginning to speak about a little bit, but in terms of, when meat is, for example, 3D synthetically produced or, copied through on a 3D printer of some kind or another, will it be considered to be kosher? Will it be considered to be parav? Right? Will it be considered to be meat? All of these things. That's a perhaps a relatively minor one, but in terms of relationships, in terms of all sorts of, as the world changes and technology changes, so halacha is going to have to deal with it. And one of the biggest areas, I think, where it's going to have to deal with it is with regard to the use of electricity on Shabbat in general. And I'm not going to try to give any answers tonight. I'm really not going to try to, because I have no idea, to be honest with you, how things are going to play out. I think that it's going to be, in the Chinese sense of the term, very interesting times. We're really not going to. I think it's going to be very messy, even as things are hammered out, and it might cause a bit of a schism in terms of different positions that are going to be put forth. So with that cheery outlook, let's start with the talking about the issue. So, when you talk about the issue, the simple question, right, which I put as the title for the shiur, Alexa, can I use you on Shabbat, right? So Alexa's answer, right, and including the Super Bowl commercials from last night, right, different voices will be heard, but the answer would be resounding no. It would be very simple. I can't, you can't. But to understand why, let's take a look at the way that the poskim deal with electricity in general. Okay, just sort of like as a background to what's going on. I think you have to, as I will point out as the shiur goes on, I think you have to take a look at this on two different levels. One, the technical halachic state, and then on the other, a more philosophical outlook, which is also no less halachic, but it's not a technical halachic; it's more philosophical halachic. But first you have to understand the background on the technical plane. If there are any engineers here, any Cooper people, I'm not going to try to. You understand the technology far better than I do. I'm not going to try to really explain the technology per se, other than in very broad. Very broad terms. Really, there have been in the last 70 years, going back 120 years, there's a major question: is electricity usher at all on Shabbat? There, a lot has been written on it, and you can look up, all sorts of articles online and that deal with the general question of trying to understand what electricity is on Shabbat. But there was a position that electricity was totally mutter on Shabbat, when all of electricity was a bulb, not even a bulb dangling from the ceiling. That's already advanced, that you have to have wires in the ceiling. But if you're talking about just simply like a lamp with an incandescent bulb, something along those lines, so there were those day out that said there is nothing usher here at all. Right? And it's not a problem whatsoever, as you're all aware. Right? That approach was a minority approach. And generally speaking, people understood it to be usher. The question, though, was, of course, was why and how. There were those who wanted to claim that it was a form of mavir, of burning that was going on, things along those lines. Other people disagreed with it. All sorts of, trying to understand that there are people's heads around the technology, the cutting-edge technology of the time. It took a while for positions to develop, but a sense that it was elsewhere, and then the question was why came in, and as the dust settled, I would say three primary positions took the field. Okay, really one, two positions, one which sort of breaks into two. One is the approach, general approach of the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was of the opinion that every time you closed a circuit, you opened a circuit, you were over an Isur D'Oraita, right? And there are slight variations on the Chazon Ish theme as well, but the Isur D'Oraita was one of either Boneh and Soter or Makah B'Patish, but it doesn't really matter for our purposes, that basically you have built something, right? In other words, your closing of a circuit, looking at it in very concrete terms, right? So something was open, and let's say the circuit, right, was open, and when the circuit was open, there was no light. When you now close the circuit, and you have the wires connecting to one another, and allowing for the electricity to flow through the wires. So that is something which has been built, which allows for the electricity to flow. That is the Isur D'Oraita. And it doesn't matter what the electric circuit is accomplishing. And it's Asur, period. Right? That's all there is to it. Right? So that's the approach of the Chazon Ish. This position has remained sort of in the halachic background. There are those who follow this, who understand it this way, but the majority approach does not see this as being an Isur D'Oraita. Most famously, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote a piece on electricity in which he directly dealt with the Chazon Ish's approach. And his feeling was that this isn't considered to be boneh for different reasons. I mean, you're not, boneh, by the way, is can be minimal. If you were to just take a nail, hammer it into the wall on Shabbat, so that's boneh, right? And you're chayv a chatat, that's an Isur D'Oraita, because you've added to an existing structure. Right? So that would be the approach of the Chazon Ish. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman said this isn't really boneh. The components are there. It's designed to be opened. It's designed to be closed. Right? And you can't call that. That doesn't fall into the category of building as such. And then the question is, well, if that's the case, why should it be usher? And here there are, again, I'm simplifying, but for our purposes, it's sufficient. And here come the two major approaches to understanding and accepting of Shlomo Zalman's argument, that basically electricity isn't usher. So then there's one aspect which everyone agrees, is that if what electricity accomplishes is an Isur D'Oraita, well, it's not the electricity itself, but rather what has electricity wrought. In other words, what does the electricity do? So if you're, no bulbs are like this, or virtually no bulbs. Well, let's say there was a plain old incandescent bulb in those fixtures above our heads, right? So the filament in the bulb, right, in its glowing state, right? So that filament would be categorized as mavir, as burning, because the notion of burning includes bringing metal to a glow, right? As if a blacksmith or something like that puts the poker into the fire until it's glowing red hot. So that's considered to be mavir, right, on a D'Oraita level. So I did the same thing by flipping a switch, right? Did with a lot less work, a lot less sweat, but I've basically done the same thing. I've caused that filament to glow. That's mavir. Or, similarly, let's say, if I flip a switch, and now the oven cooks the chicken, right? So I've violated the Isur of Bishul of cooking on Shabbat, right? Not because the electricity is usur, but what the electricity accomplished was an Isur D'Oraita, right? And you can go down the line. In other words, you can now look at the consequence of the act when I flip that switch or I push the button or whatever, I do whatever I do. And that is connected directly to me. Whereas it's a closed system, and there are those who make the mistake that when you're dealing with closed systems, that you might be included into a category of what's called grumma, right, of causation, which lessens the isser, but making it less direct. But that's not the case. In other words, you can have a very complex system, right, a Rube Goldberg type of contraption, right, but that is not considered to be grumma. Because if it's a closed system, and by virtue of the fact that I flip the switch, or I push the button, or I start the, I send the mouse running, whatever I do, the result has to occur as a result. So then it's considered to be a direct consequence of my act, and not grumma. So if I flip the switch, even though there's a lot of things that might happen along the way before the result that I'm expecting occurs, right, that's still considered to be a direct result of what I'm doing, right? It's no different if you take electricity out of it. If I, let's say, push a gas pedal in a car, right? So that there are several steps along the way before the gasoline is fed into the engine and starts burning. But nevertheless, that is Mavir, I am doing that act. So the same thing holds true if I flip the switch and cause the malacha to occur. So that's on one level. Okay, so that the electricity itself is usher. So anything that I would do that would create an isur d'oraita, I'm violating that isur d'oraita. However, but what if I'm not doing an isur d'oraita? Let's say all I'm doing is I'm turning on a switch and it's not an incandescent bulb, but it's an LED bulb, right? There's no isser that's involved in a light-emitting diode. It's something which nothing is burning. The fact that there's light that's being emitted from it doesn't turn that into a malacha. If I turn on a switch and now there's a fan that starts, and all there is an old-fashioned fan, just a blade turning at a particular speed, what have I done? Right. If I turn on an air conditioner, what have I done, etc. So the result hasn't caught, as opposed to, let's say, a heating element, perhaps. So all of these things have to be looked at, and they shouldn't be usser. And so here there are two variations, major variations on the theme, that both of them leading to a form of isser derabanan. In these cases, not d'oraita, but basically saying either because it's a form of what might be called molid, right? Meaning that which also is an established category. All these things are established categories in the Gemara, right? And the Rishonim. Molid meaning that I've created something new, right? No, it's the, I haven't, malacha, if I were to ask you, what's the definition of malacha, what would you tell me? Well, but just translate the term malacha. Work, right? So that that's wrong, right? What else could it be? Right? Because just think of the old. I always have it. The person in my mind is always saying with a British accent. It's like, oh come on, Rabbi, right? We have to say Rabbi. That way. Like, this isn't work, right? And flips the switch. There's no work going on. And he's right. There is no work, right? So yeah.
Yeah. Creative action.
Creative activity. Okay? So creative activity is a good definition for malacha. Right? That's a good definition. Now, then I come to what Alicia said. I remember somebody's name. Right? But it took a full year. That's what I'll tell you. Anyway, but then I'm dealing with a creative activity which might need to be defined as what is a creative activity. And so there, we use the Mishkan as our model, but not only the Mishkan, Right? Because if you think about it, most of the melachot and of the 39 categories of melacha that you're familiar with, they all fall into three super categories. One is the production of food, one is the production of shelter, and one is the production of clothing. Without getting into details right now. In other words, basically, the melachot are defined by creative activities that serve man's basic needs. Right, those are food, clothing, and shelter. Right, and the making of those things, that's malacha. Right, there are a few exceptions. Now's not the time to get into it. But however, the Rabbanan said, well, if I do something which is creative, right, and not quite falling into that activity, there's something that's new, right? Before there wasn't a fan turning, and now there is, right? So that's also molid. That's also create something new. I mean, the Gemara talk, or some of the Rishonim talk about it. If you, turn a solid into a liquid, right, that might fall into molid, right? Something which is different. I'm doing something through actions, not exactly the same as nolad. I'm not going to get into the difference right now. But so that's it. That's one category. So I'm doing something which is new. The other approach is to say, not that I'm really doing anything new, as much as that this is, call it uvdin dechol, to use another term, right, which is a very kind of plastic kind of term, right, very flexible, right, literally translating as the actions of the weekday. I'm doing something which isn't, to use a more apt term, Shabbistic, right? So we say Shabbistic almost as an apt, right? Expletive deleted. But Shabbistic is a. I was going to say, I think that's going to be the key to the possible solution to our dilemma, which we haven't even framed yet. But that's the background for electricity. And so basically, there are some distinctions between these different approaches, right? It's going down those three categories, looking at it. From starting that everything is an issur d'oraita, to looking at the result, and then is the result something which is something which is new and creative, as opposed to it being something which is not Shabbistic, right? So the bottom line in all of it, as you're all familiar with, is that we don't use electricity on Shabbos. Right? That's the bottom line. It doesn't make that much of a difference to us in 99.9% of the cases why we don't use electricity on Shabbat. That's the halacha. However, knowing what's going on behind it allows you, a skilled or at least a semi-skilled halachic practitioner will be able to know when he can or she can be mekel with regard to a given situation, because there are rules in place. You know, if you have a situation where you have a person who is ill, not deathly ill, but who is ill. Right, so we are more likely to be mekel with regard to that, to help that person with a isurei d'rabbanan than we are with an isur d'oraita. And even then, things that will be considered to be molid might not be considered on those circumstances to be uvdin d'chol. You can go in the other direction too. As if you're trying to view something as what's being accomplished, you might say something isn't really being accomplished. That's new, but it still isn't Shabbistic, right? So you can go in both directions, and you have to take a look at it, but knowing what the rules that you're playing with is very, very helpful. So that's the basic, if you will, until about 25 years ago or so, right? That's where things more or less stood. And then, things began to get to advance. You begin to get sensors. You begin to have closed circuit television. You have all sorts of electronic keys that occur, right? Go into a public restroom, and the toilets are flushing that way. The sinks are working with the sensors, etc. And so the question is that mutter, is that usher? Right? And so here, I'm not going to read it now because this part's already taken longer than I expected it to take. But what I did on this first page was from two very recent articles, one from as you can see from the dates, one from 2015 and one from 2016. Right? Both of them published in the Tzomet journal called Tchumen, which is an annual volume dedicated to halachic and technology issues, or halach and modern society issues. First was the approach of Rosen, now Rosen Zatzal, who was the founder of Tzomet and was responsible for many technological innovations to deal with, because his basic policy, his basic philosophy, and I had the schut to know him for many years. It was when I was a Shana Aleph in Gush, so he was my my adoptive family. At the time, they gave people in Alon Shvut, I pretended to like the students, so they had adoptive families. So I would go over there on Shabbos and Friday night, things like that. And his philosophy was that it's impossible to imagine that a Jewish state can't be run halachically. And dealing with all, he was also an engineer by training, an electrical engineer, if I'm not mistaken. And he took it upon himself about 40 years ago when he founded Tzomet to basically create halachic solutions for the problems that a modern state, especially on the technological level, creates. And over the course of the years, and the solutions themselves became more sophisticated. Just as an example, one of the first things that they developed for doctors in hospitals to write prescriptions on Shabbos for people who were not deathly and not cholim sheyesh v'em sakana. So he created a pen with disappearing ink, whereas the ink would last for a low-tech kind of solution. The ink would last for less than 24 hours. So you would write it, the prescription, and it could be filled and taken care of, or for that matter, the whatever orders needed to be written down on the chart. And then it had to be transcribed after Shabbat. Right? Otherwise, it would disappear forever. Okay. More recently, they developed a keyboard, right, which allowed for the use of typing on Shabbat, because one of the things that they, and this because they follow more the approach of Molid than the approach of Ibn Nechal, is that the feeling is that if the current is constantly flowing, and all you're doing is raising or lowering the current, that's not usher at all, because you're not really accomplishing anything that's new. Right? The current is constantly flowing, and you're just raising the volume. If, for example, just as an example that just about everyone allows for, if you have a fan and it's running on a low speed, right? So to turn the switch so that it goes on a higher speed, right, is an usher, because all that's been accomplished is that there's now more power going to the fan, right? An example where you should double check with any particular item that you're using. Don't come in there, I'm being recorded. But that any particular issue should be double checked, because there are some appliances where just the mechanism turns off one. When you turn the switch, you're actually turning off or opening one circuit and closing another. Right, and then you have the same problem. So you should just double check to make sure that whatever appliance you're doing it has. But he said basically the same thing. So you have current that's flowing through this board, and whenever you touch a particular key, so all it does, as opposed to a conventional keyboard, instead of closing a circuit on the keyboard, it for that particular letter, it just raises the current and allows for the signal to be sent to the computer. Which he felt, which is a better solution, not only because it's more permanent, but also from a halakhic perspective, without getting into why, it's a better solution. So this is was the raison d'etre for Tzomet. So on the right side of the page, he the two of them, Rabinovich is the other, wrote an article. They're outlining their personal approaches to the question of electricity. And all I did for you here was was cut and paste the their conclusions. Okay, the right side, Rav Rosen's a little bit more machmir, facing dealing with molid. So basically, his opinion is, if it doesn't matter what you are doing, right? It doesn't matter whether you're flipping a switch, whether you are using a verbal command, whether you are using a sensor. If you are knowingly causing the result, then it's us. And if you're not knowingly causing the results, then there are certain cases where he'll view it as being mutter. Somet has recently, by the way, at the time he writes in this particular article, if you read the whole article, it's in production. Since then, it has been produced. A flashlight where there's constantly a small amount of energy going through, and then when you put your hand on the handle, right, or you hold that flashlight, so that raises the energy level, and that causes you to have a full light that goes on. Okay, and it has a little tzomet sticker with a little heter and all that, and everything's great. Okay, but he feels that using, let's say, a key card and a for a lock, or for that matter, using a sensor to turn on a faucet in a bathroom or something like that, absolutely usur. Right? Because you're doing something which wouldn't have happened had you not caused the sensor. To Rabbanan, and therefore it's usur only in cases where it's in cases of great need, he'll allow for it, etc. Right? If you're stuck outside your hotel room and there's no non-Jew to open it for you, and the means that you're going to have to sleep in the hall, or if there are lights that go on automatically when you walk down the hall, and so it's better if there's some kind of way for you to be able to see without that light, all the details. Rav Rabinovich, on the other hand, so he takes he takes the Uvdin Dechol approach. So he says, for example, and here it's right there in front of you, just number 4, right? So he says that basically, I won't read it, I'll just tell you what it says, is that turning on a faucet isn't usur, right? So why should it be different if I turn the faucet manually, or if I put my hand in front of the sensor and that's what turns it on, right? There should be no difference between it, and he says that, in his opinion, that's mutter. Right? Consensus, by the way, is more like the tzomet. Right? Rabinovich's position, certainly see the logic to it, but the overall consensus is to be more machmir, to take that approach. But as a result, Rabinovich, one of his talmidim, wrote the actual tshuva, of Fixler is his name, but the Rabinovich gave it his approbation, that he doesn't feel that using a key card on electronic key card on Shabbat is usur at all. And they go through all of the details in terms of what is actually going on in different systems, etc. Right? And all of that is in print, and you can, and I think it's been translated into English as well, and you can take a look at it. I'm not going to get into the details, but that's its basic approach. Okay? So that's, if you will, the technological background for what's going on. Now the question comes up, well, what's going to happen? Right? However, one last thing that Rabinovich actually is very machmir about, right? And that's because based on what I just said, right? So then you should be able to perhaps use Alexa, right? You should be able to use the Echo. Because what Isser is being, if you say, Alexa, right? Cook me a chicken, right? Okay, that would be a problem. But if you say, Alexa, right, I'd like to hear some Karl Bach, that might be a problem for other reasons, but that you would say that wouldn't, in itself, wouldn't be a problem, because the, or then it would be perhaps Ubdin Dechol, because using a radio or using electronic devices is considered to be whole. If you said, Alexa, turn on the faucet, that would be fine. So you might, it would depend on what you're telling Alexa to do. Of course, I'm advancing myself 5-10 years down the pike in terms of technologically what the Echo will accomplish for you. Right? Right now, it's still in the Uvdin Dechol. However, he says, and this is a very interesting twist, Luchumra, that he feels that there's an additional issue which has to be taken into account. That's what's called Daber Davar. Daber Davar means, based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu, that, and you're familiar with it from, let's say, Zemirot, a lot of Zemirot that try to, you know, that incorporate discussions of Isurim and or the notion of Shabbat in general. So, Chafatzecha Asurim Begam Lachshov Cheshbonot. Hir hu mutarim uleshadei chabanot. Right? So, what's going on there? Right? What's being talked? So, what Chafatzecha Asurim means dealing with your day to day, Shabbos, as it were. That's Asur. Right? Gam lachshov cheshbonot means to discuss business issues. Right? Hir hurim mutarim is that you're allowed to think about the business issues. There's no derabanan, but it's Asur to discuss. It's not Asur to think about them. However, uleshadei chabanot, right? You're allowed to discuss issues that are involved with mitzvot, right? Even though they have business consequences, so that's why you can talk about marriage issues, etc. Right? So that's, you know, there's a little shir on the zemer. So he says daber davar is a issur derabanan, not more than derabanan. It goes back to the time of the Nevi'im, to Yeshayahu, and the Rambam quotes it as such. So if I speak to the echo, he says, that is also within the category of daber davar. It's actually worse in his way of looking at it, somewhat paradoxically. It's worse to speak to Alexa than to flip Alexa's switch. Okay? Or to move your hand in front of the sensor. Right? That is his, that particular thing. Okay. So this is, if you will, the background. But the question now becomes a more, if you were only worrying about each individual gadget that's going to come out, so then we could, I think, leave it at the level that we're at. But the problem becomes, as you are all aware, how sensors and electricity is becoming more and more part of our daily lives when we're not even necessarily aware of it. And we can pretend to not be aware of it, and there are those poskim who do that as well, and say that if you're totally doing something and you're totally unaware of what's going on, so then you're not really, you know, it doesn't fall within the category of melacha. But that's sort of like, you know, okay, just leaving the curtain in front of the wizard. Right, sort of saying, okay, we're going to pretend we don't know. It's not there, okay? Right, but we all know that it's there, right? And you know, even someone as you know technologically challenged as myself, right? A proud graduate of physics for poets. Still, right? We understand that there are sensors. We understand that it's magical. Right? Otherwise it wouldn't work. But these are things that are happening all around us. And we have, more and more smart homes that are being introduced. You're going to have driverless automobiles, driverless electric automobiles. Right? What issue exactly is going to be involved with ordering a car, right, before Shabbat? It pulls up in front of your house, right, at its designated time, right? You could probably have a Shabbos switch to make sure no light goes on when you open the door, right? But it would be an LED light anyway going on, and and you get into the car and it, whisks you to your destination, right? Making sure, of course, that you stay within the Tchum Shabbat, right? Wouldn't want to do anything out of that, right? You know, so the exactly what is the what Isurim are involved. And now if you have homes that forget about key cards, right, but are only working with facial recognition, right, it's only about, they'll be introduced, they'll be commonly introduced within the next 5 years, right, and everybody will have it, right, in 15, 20 years. Right? So that means you can never go home again? At least not on Shabbat, right? How is that going to work exactly? So one possibility, and I even wrote this in this ramble, I'll just read the paragraphs, I tried to get to the point, right? So the first few paragraphs, I talked about these things on a technical perspective, but then I'll just bring the following larger question, which will need to be addressed in the next 10 to 20 years, is how to rethink the question of electricity, graphic technological reality exists without rupturing the fabric of Shabbat. Incandescent bulbs and their relatively easy to find filaments aren't around much anymore. In a recent article, Rav Rosen, who was still alive at the time, argued that wearing Fitbits was mutter on Shabbat. He never wore a Fitbit, I can tell you that. Because anyone who ever has is well aware that you are... The reason why he said it's mutter is because it's happening without your being aware of what's going on, and you don't really aren't paying attention to it measuring your heartbeat and your sleep and how many steps you're taking and all of that. So like I said, anyone who wears the Fitbit isn't doing it to really find out how much, REM he has at night, but rather, to reach that the mythological 10,000 steps, right? So you're looking at your wrist all the time, and you're saying, oh, now I have to do another few rounds around the house to reach that, etc. But the use of a pre-programmed iRobot vacuum, on the other hand, which my wife swears by the way, should be discouraged. Right? She doesn't swear by it on Shabbat. So from a technical perspective, my opinion, the opposite conclusion is true. Right? In other words, if I pre-program the robot, right? So what? That Roomba. So what have I done really? I've set a timer, right? Nothing more, nothing less, right? Docks on its own. Gets everything done. What the, however, but, and now I want to get, because I'll be finished by 8 o'clock. But I understand why he said what he said. The impact on the atmosphere of Shabbat is undoubtedly greater as the Roomba roams than when step pulses are recorded. Okay? So, this is really the issue, right? What is the atmosphere of Shabbat? Okay, now think of this now to some makor, right? I wanted you to realize something which most people aren't aware of, and if you are, I apologize. Take a look at the second sheet. So it got messed up in the word program that I was using, so I apologize. But there are three discussions of Shabbat, three primary discussions of Shabbat in Sefer Shemot. And we think of Sefer Shabbat, and we've been reading it over the last 2 weeks, right? And we'll continue to read the next one that's going to be in the coming, actually the fourth in Parshat Mishpatim, and then it'll come up again in Parshat Kitisa. So we sort of think of that Shabbat is given the way that we think of Shabbat. But it didn't happen that way. Shabbat, right, the first introduction of Shabbat was where?
After the 6 days of creation.
Okay, So you're right, and I'll now talk about the second introduction of Shabbat. Because it took 2,448 years, right, according to the traditional count, right, to go from that first Shabbat in Bereshit, Perek Aleph, Perek Bed, to the next time we meet Shabbat in the Torah, which is?
Marah.
According to Chazal, it's Marah, right, but that's according to Chazal. Where in the Torah is it explicit?
At the Man.
Right after Marah. So this is, now, you got to think about this. Why did it take 2,400 years for that to happen? Like, did the Avot keep Shabbat? Right? Did they know about Shabbat? And so there are all sorts of Midrashim, and that's not my concern at the moment. On a Pshat level, no, they had absolutely no idea. Now, God created the world, right? And so why wasn't Shabbat already something which was part of Shabbat Mitzvot B'nai Noach? Right? Why isn't it there? Right? So it seems as though, and this is something which is several of the Parshanim, especially in the late 19th century, so they take this approach. That basically, the God's Shabbat, as it were, right, was a concept. The same way that I can talk about the concept, I don't know, of how man and woman were created. Right? It's an interesting question. It's good for a shir in Torah. It creates perhaps some philosophical discussions, etc. But in terms of its practical ramifications, right, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. Right? And that's the idea of Shabbat. It was as a concept. The fact that God rested. The fact that man is a steward of the world, as opposed to being a master of the universe. Right? So those are very important things. But, again, without any clear halachic legal guidelines. What changes, and starting at with the man, and going on to Sinai, and then going on to the Mishkan, is that there is this now legal definition of Shabbat, which binds us. But here, too, the legal definition of it is only going to be, is introduced in stages. The first stage with the man, there is no, and I'm following the approach of the Netziv here, there is no Isser Melacha that is introduced. The Netziv says, for example, in the Pasuk that says that whatever you're supposed to bake, Tasher Tofu Tofu, Tasher Bashel Bashel, whatever you're supposed to bake, bake, whatever you're supposed to cook, cook. So the Netziv says that doesn't mean that they were being told they have to do the Melacha, it's Asr to cook and bake on Shabbat. What it was saying was that if you didn't prepare for Shabbat, if you didn't think of Shabbat as a concept that applied to you, the man the next day, you'd wake up and it all had rotted away. Same way that it would have rotted away on Tuesday or Wednesday. It would have rotted away on Shabbat morning also. But only because you did the preparation on Friday, that's what allowed the man to exist on Shabbat. It was basically if you understood that there was this notion of Shabbat, and the specific term that's used is Shabbaton. If you understood this concept of Shabbaton, so then your man stayed in existence. The first time the Torah tells us explicitly that you can't do melacha is only a few weeks later at Sinai, in the Aseret Dibrot. And even then, by the way, there isn't an Isser, there's an Isser, but there isn't a notion of Chilul Shabbat, of defiling Shabbat, the Shabbat which that defiling which has the additional isur or mechalaleh hamot yumat, right, the capital crime that's connected to it. That's even later, right? There's this development. So you say, who cares, right? So, okay, maybe that was relevant for the people then. Why is that relevant for me now? Because after all, I have to do all of Shabbat, right, in its full package. So the answer, I think, is because the Torah is telling us, and telling us this way, the way it was presented to Bnei Yisrael, is to understand that the concept of Shabbat, right, is the foundation of Shabbat. Right? The notion of this being a day of rest, notion of it being without details yet, right? But this notion that because God rested, I have to also treat Shabbat differently and rest, use the term Shabbaton. So that's what is important. So if in reality, and that could be, Shabbaton can be translated as Shabbos dip. Now we think, as I said, Shabbat is, to say Shabbos dip is sort of like being, you know, okay, rabbi needs reason to forbid Shabbos dip, right? Right? Sort of like a dictionary definition, right? But the real answer is that Shabbat or Shabbaton, that notion of Shabbos dip is fundamental to what Shabbat is. That is the fundamental aspect. In fact, the Rambam, and I brought it here in number 7, 6 and 7, Rambam says that there's a mitzvah to say of Shabbat, and there's a mitzvah lo tasei of Shabbat. Or actually two mitzvah to say of Shabbat. One is Kiddush, but the other, which is primary, is not Kiddush, but rather to rest. And then the Rambam in different places talks about how do you violate or not fulfill this notion of resting. The simplest way of not fulfilling it is by doing malacha. Do malacha, it's a simple binary. If you do malacha, then you didn't rest. If you don't do malacha, you did rest. Then the Rambam says a few prokim later, 20 prokim later actually, that you can violate the asay without doing the malacha. If you do, right? I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Gabriela.
So what that definition of work, right? So, right, is actually right. Because the definition of work, the Rambam says, without getting into now how to define work, that isn't what's going to violate milacha, the lo ta'aseh. But if you work, even if you didn't do creative activity, right, you have violated the mitzvah aseh of Shabbaton. The Ramban takes this a step further. And he, the Eretz HaTzvi guys know that when I say something is famous, it means what? You guys don't remember? No, it means that I know it, right? So if I say it's very famous, so then it means that you should know it. So this is very, very famous. It's something that everybody should know. Okay? The Ramban talks about it along the lines, he even compares it to the super famous idea of kiddushim to you, right? That the Ramban says that you shouldn't be a naval birshut haTorah, right? You shouldn't be a scoundrel with the Torah's license. So but basically he says the same thing with regard to Shabbaton, with regard to Shabbat and Yom Tov. And he says, here he paints this incredibly detailed picture of the medieval marketplace, talking about how, you know, the workers are working, and again, I don't have time to read it inside, but it's here in front of you if you want to take a look at it on your own. It's source number 10. Basically, I'll read it. Number 10, it's a pasuk about Yom Tov, so he's talking about Yom Tov, but it says the following. So, lo shiyitrach, the end of the first line, kol hayom limdora tfuot lishkola perot vamatanot lemale chaviot yain lufanot hakelim v'gam avanim mibayit lebayit v'makom lemakom v'im hayta ir mukefet chomad latot nulot balayla yu omsim al hachamorim v'af yain v'anavim v'te'enim v'chol masa yaviu b'yom tov. So basically, everything that you might want to accomplish on Yom Tov for Shabbat, that you have, you're moving, you have the movers, they're moving one thing from one house to another, they're working and they're filling barrels of wine, they're measuring grain, etc., etc., etc. All the commerce that goes on, yeshuk male lechol mekach umemkar, tiyach anut ptucha vechenvanim makif ashulchanim ashulchanam vahazuvim lifnehem. Whereas you'll have, the stores are open. How many guys have played Scrabble on Shabbat? Right, so how do you keep score?
Books,
right? So we know how to do business on Shabbat, right? The people just have all these books, you know, you walk into the store, and you'll have just, you know, you'll just move the things, right? We figured out how to have Yom Kippur appeals a long time ago, right? Just have to flip that little piece of paper on the side, no problem, right? And you're in for the $18,000 chai. They go, no, I bet the $18. Oh, so too late. Anyway, but that's the type of thing, right? That's all you have to do, right? And basically the Ramban says, nothing that I just described is an Isur D'oraita. None of that is Molacha. So, right, Jews are Jews, right? Baruch Hashem, you know, we are the masters of the loophole, right? So we'll know how to run our businesses on Shabbat without doing any Molacha. We'll figure it out, right? No problem. And that's with medieval technology. Right? You can just imagine what we can do with modern technology. Right? The Ramban couldn't imagine, but we can imagine. So the Ramban says, and that's why the Torah says the word Shabbaton. Torah, because what the Torah wants to say is, don't look for the loophole. Understand what the concept's supposed to be. And you can not violate a single malacha and have missed the whole purpose of Shabbat. Missed the whole purpose of Chag. Whole purpose was Shabbaton. And you just didn't do it. Right? And so the question now, I think, based on that, and I spent more time describing the technology, but if you ask me, the technology is almost a secondary question. Because the technology question is the question that's trying to deal with what is, you know, specific points. Okay, and I'm not, God forbid, I'm not trying to minimize the importance of defining the halachic categories and understanding what is appropriate, what's inappropriate. But I'm going to give you an example where within, you know, which you're all familiar with in our daily lives, and you'll see what I mean. Take the case of the Shabbos clock. Okay, so About 35 years ago, Rav Moshe Feinstein had a tshuva. His grandson asked him the question with regard to using the Shabbos clock to cook food. Right? And Rav Moshe wrote a what's considered to be a landmark tshuva about Shabbos clocks. And he basically says Shabbos clocks should be totally banned. That's his basic position. And he compares it to Amira La'akum, compares it to asking a non-Jew to do malacha for you. And he even, I mean, it's more complicated than this, but he basically says that even the use of lights, which had already been, Shabbos clocks for lights, which had already been, which was already popularized by the time that he spoke about it. So he says, the only reason we can be makel is because in Europe, there were those people who allowed you to tell a non-Jew to light a lamp for you for, you know, for the use of Shabbat, so that you had light on Shabbat, and we were willing to rely on that. But basically, Shabbos clocks should not be allowed at all. Rav Moshe's position, as you all know, has not really been accepted. Right? The I don't know. I shouldn't say I don't know anyone, but virtually everyone uses Shabbos clocks for all sorts of appliances, for radiators, for air conditioners, for the platot for Shabbat. Right, for heating trays, things along those lines, things that Rav Moshe would not have approved of at all. And there you are, it's accepted. But if I were to tell you, right, and then when it comes to dishwashers, right, it's a bit of a machloket, there's a Tzomet has a Tzomet switch for dishwashers, because dishwashers have this nasty habit of not operating if the door is not closed. Right, so. So that creates the problem. You can set it on a timer, but you have to close the door, right? As a safety mechanism, right? Because not really safety, because it's just a question of water being all over the floor. On if it's open, it goes on. So it requires. So that's a problem because that's already closing. When I close the door, even if it's only going to go on in 3 hours, so I've created the conditions that will allow it to go on Shabbat, right? So Tzomet came up with a switch that basically disconnects that safety feature. Right? The Shabbos switch on the dishwasher, right? So there's a machloket as to whether you can use that or not. Some people say that that's okay. Other people think that it's a problem. It's a machloket between myself and my wife, as for example, right? So we have it in the house. You can understand who the primary posek in the house is. But the but I won't. But that's where I draw the line. I said, but I won't load the dishwasher. There's this question. So we use timers all the time, and yet, if I were to tell you that there was a big game on this Friday night, which I really want to watch, so I'm going to set my my television onto the timer, right, and watch it. Right? So you would probably not think of me as a particularly religious person, right? And yet, if you think about it, the melachot that are being done by this timer, with in cases of the things that we all do, with radiators and with platot and all these things, and lights for that matter, right, and incandescent bulb, right, is far more problematic from a melacha perspective, right, than is having a TV set go on, especially if it's an LED screen. Right? And yet we all understand instinctively that there's a distinction, right? And that one is okay, and that one, or maybe has to be discussed halachically in terms of the nuances, but the other is just wrong. Right, there's a violation of the atmosphere of Shabbat in a very real way, right? So I think, right, that the answer to the question, this is where it's going to become very messy, because that is to a certain extent that's top down in terms of people saying, oh, you can't watch TV on Shabbat, right? But it's more a question of a certain communal sense of what Shabbat is supposed to be like. As much grassroots as it is top down. And the definition of Shabbaton, right, and some poskim don't like it as being the Rav Rosen, for example, says, I don't want to use Uvdin Dechol because it's too plastic. it's a moving target. One person's Uvdin Dechol is another person's Onek Shabbat. Right? So it's very difficult to pin down. But I think that just because it's difficult to pin down, that might be the only answer. Right? Trying to define it. Right? How are you going to... And I don't know how the chips are going to fall. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to come here and say, oh, it's going to be okay to use facial technology, right? To facial recognition technology to get into people's homes. Right? Or that people are going to be able to use when it's no longer a Roomba or an Echo, but it's going to be a combination. And those are household robots that are, loading the dishwasher that's on the timer, right? So, right, it's going to be very difficult to know where to draw the line. And it's going to be and it could very well be that different communities, this, as I said at the outset when I started, could be that this might be, God forbid, cause for schism. I know that you're going to have people who say, oh, you have to have low-tech Shabbos houses. Right? You can't use these homes. Right? You're going to have like a switch that turns off your entire house. Right? And then go back to the technology of the 1960s. Right? And other people are going to say, no, right? That this isn't. And, and it might be the line that divides people who are considered to be, whatever is considered called Orthodox and whatever is considered to be, the adjective of Orthodox, right, which other people reject, right? Whereas that is going to be a very serious dividing line, right? I hope not, right? But I think the only way that it's going to come to a conclusion, right, that it's going to become too ubiquitous for us to be able to simply say, oh, this sensor is okay, that sensor is not okay. It's going to have to have an overarching philosophical approach based on the notion of Shabbaton. And the Ramban will help us only to a certain extent, and with this I'll close. The Ramban will help us because the Ramban, as I said, and then it's a critically important Ramban, talks about the idea of how Shabbaton is the key. But the Ramban's version of Shabbaton, notice all of the examples that he spoke about, were examples of what we call, and what Gabriela said, was work. Right? That, what about things which aren't work? Things that are leisure? Things that are, things that we want to do and we're happy doing. Right? Will Shabbaton be the same kind of issue there? Right, that's going to be a major question. Trying to define Shabbaton in a 21st century type of setting, where the activities that are being done are either normal activities like opening doors, right, or leisure activities that contribute, the activity themselves contribute to Onik Shabbat. Right, so then it's going to be an even more complicated question. Right, but just because the question is going to be more complicated doesn't mean that we can, run away from it. So I think we're going to have to deal with it. As I said at the beginning, it's going to dwarf the type of Shiloh that people had to deal with 50 years ago. But that seems to be the world that we're heading on. And Be'ezrat Hashem, maybe we can just ask Alexa, and she'll know what to do. So, thank you very much.
I'm in the early stages of planning a sci-fi story with this basic thing as a premise. It's the idea, it takes place hundreds of years in the future, but the